This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by the Todd Herman Show. Heard weekday mornings from 6 to 9 right here on KTTH. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
So, we now have confirmed that the president is going to be announcing his pick to the Supreme Court on Saturday. This is the same day he has an event, I believe, in Michigan. So this is going to be a big day for this administration.
I would say that I'm very close to making a decision in my own mind, and I'm going to reveal it on Saturday. And I'm doing that out of respect for Justice Ginsburg.
And I think this is the right tack to take. You have Ginsburg lying in repose this week. You have the death so fresh. You don't immediately jump on it and move forward. He's giving it some time. And I think that that is the smart move. I also thought it would be a smart move to vote on it after the election, and maybe that's what ends up happening. I don't know. I think politically it makes more sense to make the nomination announcement on Saturday and then campaign exclusively or near exclusively on this as the singular issue for voters and say, if you keep me in office, you get this new Supreme Court, but if you don't, what you end up going to get is some crazy socialist activist left winger on the court, because that's who Joe Biden listens to. He has enabled that part of the progressive base in the Democratic Party, and now he relies on them. He's going to be their puppet. Take that as the strategy. I think it's a winning one. Now, I don't know the timeline here. It's certainly possible that's exactly what he's going to do, but he said yesterday, the president, that he would prefer to get this vote over and done with before the election. And we can tell you now, we know there's no one in the way. There's no one standing in the way on the Republican side in the Senate. Right now, the president has the votes to bring this to the floor and have the Senate actually decide. Why? Because earlier today, the remaining senator who hadn't really gone on the record as to what they were going to do, what he was going to do, Mitt Romney from Utah, he stepped up and said, yeah, no, I'd vote. If it comes before me, I'm going to vote, meaning he's not going to block this. And he pointed out earlier today, as he was talking to some members of the press, that precedent does, in fact, support this move. And it's rather ridiculous to point to what happened under the Obama administration with Judge Merrick Garland, because that actually was not a precedented move.
I think there's some perception on the part of some writers and others that, gee, what happened with Merrick Garland was unfair. I don't agree with that. I don't know whether you think it was a good decision or not, but it wasn't unfair because it was consistent with history.
Yep.
It was consistent with precedent.
And by the way, it's important to understand that, because right now you've got Chuck Schumer and the Democrats saying the opposite. Now, I don't know if people have the appetite for a nuanced conversation about the precedent. I think most people probably just look at the optics and they automatically assume that this is hypocritical. But as we told you yesterday, in the 10 instances in which we had a similar situation in which it was an election year, a justice needed to be replaced, and we had a president in one party and a Senate controlled by the other, out of those 10, eight times, they did what they did to Justice or Judge Garland. That is the consistency. It would be inconsistent to do otherwise.
It was consistent with the Constitution. So the idea that the Merrick Garland decision was unfair and therefore it has to be made up by doing something which also wouldn't make a lot of sense, which is saying to President Trump, you can't get your nominee either, that just doesn't follow for me. The Garland decision was consistent with history. The decision to proceed with a new nominee is also consistent with history and precedent.
He's 100% correct. Now, again, whether or not that is a moving argument to some folks, don't know. I tend to believe the nuance and the precedent argument is not as strong as just simply calling someone a hypocrite. But oh well, this is not something that the Republicans and the Trump administration can't overcome, and really it doesn't matter, because now they're moving forward. despite the fact that the same leftist that thanked Mitt Romney for voting to impeach the president, let's forget the fact that all of a sudden now they're attacking him for being consistent with history. A history that a lot of folks on the left don't seem to care about because they are upset that they're going to lose this progressive seat. Now, they're right to be upset. We would have been upset if Scalia's seat was replaced with Merrick Garland. So I don't hit at the Democrats for being mad about this and trying to put up a fight. Republicans would do the exact same thing. You and I would expect that of the Republicans. But what else do we expect of Republicans? Well, right now, we have the power in the Senate. Full stop. And so the expectation is to replace Ginsburg, a progressive, with a conservative. Not just because there's precedent, it's because we have the constitutional authority to do so. And this changes everything. Where now we don't have to worry about whether or not Chief Justice John Roberts is going to side with the Republicans. Does this mean Roe v. Wade gets overturned? I don't know. But I do know that I care about more than just one particular ruling. And I know that when you have a conservative court, it's going to be that much better of chances of ruling in our favor. So I love that. And yes, that added benefit, we have the constitutional authority. Now, some folks on the left don't seem to care about that constitutional authority or really about justice and fairness. And as a result, you're hearing more and more and more from Democrats saying basically, hey, now we're going to stack the court. An argument that we've been hearing since Friday. Earlier today on CNN, for example, Senator Maggie Hirono of Hawaii took the exact same position. She downplays it a little bit, but she took the same position.
This is long overdue court reform as far as I'm concerned, and I've been thinking about court reform and what we can do regarding...
She's not been thinking about court reform. Come on.
...bring the Supreme Court to make it so much more objective.
You're not also looking to make it more objective. When you take a position that you support court stacking, which is essentially putting more judges on the bench, it's literally the opposite of making a court more objective. The whole goal that the Democrats are taking on right now is to stack the court with Democrats, which ensures more rulings go in their favor. In fact, it guarantees probably all of them go in the favor that the Democrats want it to go. How's that objective? Literally, has, Producer Payton, maybe check the Wikipedias. Have we decided to change the definition of the word objective?
Objective. How many J's are in objective?
Four.
Four? No, it hasn't changed.
Okay, it hasn't changed. Well, Democrats like to change definitions. They do it all the time. This is literally the opposite of objective. And by the way, it tells you all you need to know about how the Democrats view the courts. If they don't get their way, they put more progressives or socialists or people who are far to the left, they put all of them on the bench so that they can win every single battle. They want to stack the court against conservatives. That is not how you ensure justice is being served. That is not how you ensure objectivity. The system we have in place right now works the way it's supposed to. Sometimes Democrats get upset. But I'm going to assume that there's going to be some point in the future in which we don't have a Republican in the White House, nor do we have a Republican-controlled Senate, as sad as that might be, in which we have to replace a Supreme Court justice who happens to be a conservative, and the Democrats are going to get their way that time. That's how this all works. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. Today is National Voter Registration Day. Secretary of State Kim Wyman's going to stop by in a moment. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So today is National Voter Registration Day. Yay! Helping us celebrate and to help preview some of the issues that we might face when the ballots do come out, is Secretary of State Kim Wyman. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on.
The kids are very excited, as you just heard there. What do the statistics look like right now as far as voter registration is concerned?
I think Washington does a very good job of voter registration. We are at about 4.7 million registered voters right now. That was before we started today, and we anticipate a spike in activity on voter registration because of Voter Registration Day. So we're excited about that, and there are varying numbers that I've heard of how many eligible voting, what the voting eligible population is here in Washington State, and that would be people who are over 18, are U.S. citizens, are residents of Washington State, who have lived here for 30 days or more. And but I think we're running right about 70-80% of those people are registered to vote. So
when you start to see these spikes, because obviously National Voter Registration Day is every single year, do you happen to see it come from any specific parts of Washington, or is it just kind of across the board you see an increase?
It's usually across the board that we see the increase.
And so that's what you're basically expecting this time around, despite the fact that it's a presidential year?
Yes. One of the things I would expect to see quite a bit in the next month and hope to see in the next month is a lot of address changes, quite honestly. I think you and I have talked before, Jason, that, 10% of our state moves every year.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to that four-year cycle of peak activity, people have had, 40% of our state has moved. So it's really keeping up with those address changes, and we do a lot of things preemptively to do that. But voters, I think, in the next few weeks are going to be doing that a lot more.
So how easy is it today to register to vote?
I think Washington has one of the easiest systems to vote, register to vote. You can register online if you have a Washington State ID card or a driver's license, and you can do that at votewa.gov. You can also, when you get your driver's license at Department of Licensing, or you can do a mail-in form.
And how quickly is the turnaround? So what's the cutoff date on when one might have to do it?
For online transactions, it's 8 days before Election Day, so people can do that right now. And I encourage people today to look at your registration to make sure all that information is current so we can get the right ballot to you the first try. But voters will be able to do that up until 8 days before Election Day. And then after that, up till 8 o'clock election night, you would have to go in person to a county election office to be able to register and vote.
What do you think the Supreme Court issue means for the turnout? Obviously, you and I had already spoken that we expect the turnout to be higher than normal. Do you think this pushes it even further?
I think it just confirms for both conservatives and progressives that the president matters, that the person who's sitting in the Oval Office matters, that the U.S. Senate matters in terms of seating the next Supreme Court justice. So I think it is a front and center reminder for both sides of what's at stake in the upcoming election. And I think it's going to absolutely mobilize both the left and the right.
If you're just joining me, we're talking with Secretary of State Kim Wyman on this National Voter Registration Day. On a separate but related issue, you're asking a Thurston County court to declare electronic signatures as unacceptable for the purposes of signing on to an initiative petition. Take us through why you're taking that position.
It really goes back to the way that our Constitution is written related to initiative process and then also just our state law. And right now, you have over 100 years of tradition of doing initiative and referendum with a piece of paper and an ink signature. And that's what all of our processes and laws are built on. Now, in COVID, there is certainly interest in trying to make that easier. Now, for me, that changes the discussion, because if you're going to make it easier to collect signatures, that threshold of 8% of the people who cast a ballot in the last gubernatorial race, could be adversely affected. You could make it really easy to qualify measures for the ballot. So we have to be very thoughtful in how we move forward, and we can't just make a capricious and arbitrary decision to start changing a process that's over a century old. So We're asking the court because we don't see in the law where we have the power to accept those. And in fact, the legislature had a law that they passed last year. It was a 90-page bill, and it was about using electronic signatures for contracts and all sorts of negotiable instruments. And they did not attach any changes to Title 29A, which is where election law is. And I think that's telling that the legislature was silent on it. And then further, a bill that was about electronic signature gathering for initiatives didn't get out of committee, was not considered by either chamber. So it's something that really should be a legislative decision and should really be thought through well. And right now we've been asked, so we're asking the court for clarification to speed the process up.
And frankly, I don't like the idea that we would do it in the middle of this cycle anyway, because as you and I have spoken about in the past on this very issue, you had initiatives going through the process, actually collecting signatures in a safe and responsible way, and they do get it to you on time. In fact, trying to repeal the sex ed bill, that's going to be on the ballot. So if they had to go through the whole process, everyone else should as well. Again, unless you're going to make this change moving forward in the future so that everyone is being treated equally. I don't quite understand how it would be verified. And so if I were to sign an electronic signature, and I assume that means I just go online and I fill out a form, how would you verify?
Well, and you're getting to the heart of the question we're putting before the court is there are no standards in state law. There are no standards in administrative code that we have for other, elements of the initiative process. So how are we even going to move forward with that? And you know, a lot of there's been anecdotal commentary on this. You know, we could use DocuSign. We use those for contracts. Well, again, the devil's in the details in our world, and we need to make sure it's fair. So all of these things, we just need clarification from the court. And then if the court says we need to do that, we will figure out how to do it in a fair way.
There you go. We've been talking with Secretary of State Kim Wyman on this National Voter Registration Day. One more time, how do people register?
You want to go to votewa.gov.
Votewa.gov. Secretary Wyman, best of luck on the reelection campaign. You know we are here rooting for you, and we appreciate you stopping by.
Well, thanks so much, Jason. You have a great day.
You as well. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Celebrity news.
So yesterday, Ellen was back for season 18 of her insufferably horrible talk show. And now, however, most people in this world understand that she is really, 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 really bad to work for.
I think you forgot like three really.
Probably. It turns out, and by the way, this is kind of an open secret in the sense if you know where to look, you can find the horror stories that people allege having worked in her building on her show, that she is a rotten, mean-spirited person, and she created, according to a bunch of folks, one of the most toxic work environments you can imagine. Now, as someone who encourages and I would argue embodies a toxic work environment, I've got no problem with her treatment of other people. Unlike her, I just don't hide who I am. I am rotten to my core in public and in private, am I not?
You are very true to who you are.
I make him cry all the time.
Multiple times a week.
The difference is, she wanted to pretend otherwise. She's all happy and she dances all the time on her show to compensate for the fact that she's just really, really, really bad. So over the course of the last couple of months, there was an investigation into the workplace and it found a lot of problems. It ended up in a lot of resignations / firings. And she addressed it on her show.
As you may have heard, this summer there were allegations of a toxic work environment at our show. And then there was an investigation.
I said that too.
I learned that things happened here that never should have happened. I take that very seriously, and I want to say I am so sorry to the people who were affected. I know that I'm in a position of privilege and power, and I realize that with that comes responsibility, and I take responsibility for what happens at my show.
Okay, well then you should step down. You take responsibility. There have been rumors of her just picking on random people who work for her and just choosing to make their day hellish. Like, that's how she was treating people.
Sounds
and everyone
familiar.
There was, I know, but again, I'm open about it. She's not. But she gets to stand up there and say, oh, well, no, my name's at the top of the show, so the buck stops with me, without actually saying she was the one responsible for all of this. Because that might push back at her image.
She kind of apologized. So
kind of, barely.
Your kind of apology is welcome any day.
Yeah, again, I'm true about who I am. I'm not going to apologize.
Darren, Nicole.
Tom.
Jeff. Taylor,
Mac. Yeah. I was nice to Mac because he was a New Zealander. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. When we come back, a Seattle public school is teaching kids some outrageous, outrageous things, including referring to rioters as freedom fighters. Is it your school? We're going to get into it when we come back. Rancho live on this Tuesday afternoon. Really do appreciate you guys tuning in. There is a Seattle public school that decided to teach students as young as 11 years old that they shouldn't say the term riot. They should call them uprisings. And if you're going to talk about the people engaged in the uprisings, call them freedom fighters. And in this lesson, and this is arguably the worst part, in a series of horrible things that were being taught, students were encouraged to donate money, presumably their allowance, to bail funds, including one that has recently been tied to helping release an accused child rapist. And to make matters worse, similar lessons are planned for later on this semester. The teacher in this case is not hiding her political beliefs, and she's using public funds, this is a public school, to forward a specific agenda. Now, towards the end of the last semester, the middle school teacher at Catherine Blaine K through 8 school, which is in Seattle's Magnolia neighborhood, she forwarded this pro-riot propaganda to 6th, 7th, and 8th grade students. The teacher's name is Rachel Stein. And just a few days after the weekend riots slash uprisings on May 30th and May 31st, Mrs. Shine offered a PowerPoint presentation titled Current Topics, Racism. Now, she started off by complaining about the media coverage surrounding the riots. She bemoaned the use of images showing violence and destruction, not just in Seattle, but around the country. And in part of this presentation, one of the slides says the photos and the videos, quote, reinforces the thug stereotype that supports white supremacy. And so to that end, she decided to use a slide to instruct students to watch your words when describing these riots. Specifically, students were told that they should stop using the term riots when talking about the unrest. Instead, they should be called an uprising, the rioters, which again, in the context that she presented, she says, you shouldn't say thugs. Although I don't recall people saying thugs all that often. But you're not supposed to say that. What you're supposed to say is freedom fighters. So those individuals who were breaking in to the businesses in downtown Seattle, torching police vehicles, stealing clothes and cheesecake from the Cheesecake Factory.
Ooh.
Call them freedom fighters. How remarkable is that? Pursuing freedom one stolen cheesecake at a time. Then she goes on to say, this teacher at Catherine Blaine K through 8, she explains that every institution in this country is racist. She used a quote from an Instagram account called The Conscious Kid. And they're told that racism is, quote, structural and embedded into all aspects of society. No presenting another opinion on that. She presents it as fact. Using a Twitter feed that has repeatedly blamed white supremacy for when Instagram takes down the kid's post because it violates terms of service. This is white supremacy. Now, unfortunately, this presentation decided to double down on this idea of systemic racism. Again, not choosing to present different sides of an argument, but simply arguing as fact, quote, things in America have always been set up this way. Again, this is a not so subtle way to say this country is awful. You should not love it. And so for you to break down these systems of oppression and push back against racism, the 11, 12, 13-year-old kids, they were told to listen to black activists. Don't ask them questions. Don't push back on anything they say. Just listen. But that wasn't the only action item that was given to these students. They got a laundry list of action items. Action items that promise to lead to some kind of change on racial injustice. For starters, students are told that they can join in on a protest, an uprising, or a walkout. Now, my presumption is the teacher, Rachel Shine, probably doesn't want the kids going and picketing outside of a Planned Parenthood. Probably doesn't want them marching in D.C. for life. But if you adopt the political views that she's hoping her impressionable students will adopt, it's all good. Thumbs up. But if you're not comfortable or not free to attend one of these uprisings of freedom fighters, Rachel Shine in this presentation says you can actually donate your money. Again, presumably, your allowance. Donate to Black Lives Matter. Donate to the ACLU, donate to a whole bunch of bail funds, which she says will help protesters get out of jail quickly. Now, on this long list of potential places for you to donate includes the Minnesota Bail Fund. The Minnesota Bail Fund was promoted by a whole bunch of celebrity checkmarks and politicians like Kamala Harris. A bail fund that has recently come under fire because we found out that the money raised was actually used to bail out suspects accused of attempted murder, the raping of an 8-year-old girl, and various acts of looting. Oh, excuse me, uprisings by freedom fighters against alcohol consumption sites.
It's very respectful of you to use the proper language when describing them, Jason.
I try. I don't want her to call me out. Now, I actually talked via email to Rachel Shine, and I asked her if there was anything wrong in her view of asking young students to donate money, for starters, but to donate to causes, especially, I should say, in light of this news that the fund was actually related now to controversy surrounding giving money to people who weren't actually exclusively put in jail for anything related to the uprisings. Her response to me, I do not, because the justice system in this country has always been disproportionately harder on black and brown people. Isn't she a hero, this Rachel Shine, white lady? Woke white teacher? Good for her. She's a hero. By the way, the presentation recommends the following as reliable media sources: Al Jazeera, the AP, Vox, and something called Bitch Media, which I've never heard of.
Never heard of it. Day in my life.
Now, she didn't confirm whether or not these presentations were altered in some way when she actually did them in person. I just pulled these files from the school's website, their SharePoint website. Although, weirdly, if you go to Catherine Blaine K through 8 right now, they make reference to these presentations, but the links are broken. So just in case people actually want to look at these in full, text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll go ahead and I'll send you a link directly to my blog, not just for you to read and go through the material, but for you to post absolutely everywhere. Because if you are disgusted by this curriculum, by these lessons, you better start speaking up now. Because Rachel Shine tells me that, guess what? We're going to do more of this semester. And I looked at least one of the books that they are asking seventh graders to read. It's called This Book is Anti-Racist. It's by an author named Tiffany Jewell. The intent seems very clear. They're trying to create activists out of these students. Not present some objective look at what's going on and exposing these kids to various sides of an issue, but telling them very clearly what side to take. And in this book, the book is pretty clear too. I went through this book. I read books that are seventh grade level. They say it's trying to build a new lens to see yourself and the world around you. It tells kids that they can resist and disrupt. At one point, this book is anti-racist. Even tells students to have a plan ready to possibly intervene when they witness police interacting with black suspects. And there's a sense of urgency to that advice. She writes, you don't want these two young black men to become new hashtags and statistics. And so she gave, for example, her own game plan, which includes stay in the car and shout out to the two being held by police. I see this. Says stop other people walking by and ask them to stand witness too. There is strength and power in numbers. And in this book, she even acknowledges that there are risks, physical risks, to the students she's encouraging to intervene. She says some of your choices will require you to take risks. Some may not. Understanding your privilege and the power you have or do not have is important. It will determine how you approach everything. This situation with the police is one where, especially if you're white and cisgendered, you can use your privilege to speak up. Now, she has no regrets, of course, with any of what she's pushing. But this should alarm every single person, including, by the way, people who might agree with some of this because your students, your kids, are not being served by an unobjective look at current events. This has to do with a very specific political agenda. It doesn't present another viewpoint. It doesn't even pretend to. A teacher's role, regardless of their political position, be it hardcore progressive or hardcore conservative, it is not their role, it is not their job to create an activist. Certainly not pushing this stuff in front of 11-year-olds. That's ridiculous to me. That is not their job. And this isn't happening in a bubble. This is not a Seattle issue. We talked about the school in Marysville, Grove Elementary, Discovery Elementary out in Gig Harbor. We talked about that last week. They're doing exactly the same thing. This is happening all over the state. And of course, the teachers will justify their actions. They'll say, oh, we're just trying to teach kids how not to be racist. So if you call this out, you must be a racist. That, of course, is dishonest. They are playing the long game. They are positioning these current events with a very, very simple objective. They want to create social justice activists. So when these students get old enough to vote, they're going to have the opportunity to actually put in politicians to advance the policies and political views that these teachers hold. They're investing in this propaganda. And a parent who's listening right now in their car or at home or in the office, who's kind of disgusted by this, that means you need to intervene and you need to make sure that this stuff is not being taught in your kid's class. Pay attention to what it is they're being presented. Help shine a spotlight on this issue. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. To the Jason Rantz Show. They can't go to class yet because it's dangerous. Yet 4,000 UW students have begun to move back onto campus. They're moving into the dorms. Now, there's some rules. You got to wear masks. Only two people can help the student move in. This one makes no sense. Only one vehicle per student. If you're allowing two people to help, three people in total, what do you care if they add an extra car so they can cut down on the trip? Let's say they're moving in from, you know, Marysville or Eastern Washington, and they want to make two. Okay. They say elevators can only be used by two people, and they have to be from the same household. So God forbid, you've got like four people trying to move into a dorm at once. You're going to be waiting a long time for the actual elevator. Now, for some kids, they're just saying, look, I just want to get to some semblance of normalcy. Here's sophomore Stuart Fleslin.
I just hope it goes back to normal. And because of now, everything's limited. And so kind of just trying to figure out how to deal with that.
It's still limited. I know that in some instances, they're doing hybrid classes of online and in person. But I just earlier today, I spoke to someone who goes there and said all the classes, unless you're an international student or like a med student or something, all the classes are basically going to be online. So essentially, you're paying a huge, huge, huge tuition bill for the pleasure of not leaving your dorm and not being able to enjoy a traditional campus life. So I feel bad for folks like Kendall, who's a UW freshman. Up until now, she's never even stepped foot on campus.
I'm definitely really excited. I was very nervous as we were driving into Seattle because I was like, oh my goodness, I've never been here before. And it's definitely kind of crazy seeing how quiet the campus is, especially a few days before school starting. Normally, I feel like campuses would be a lot busier and more of the buildings would be open and everything.
I mean, she does know we're in the middle of a pandemic, right? I mean, did they not tell her? Did she not read the letters?
Do you think that students read? Students don't read. They do.
Well, the parents had to have read. Here's Carrie, her mom, talking with Como TV.
We've had some friends that have already had sent their kids to college and have already contracted COVID. So that was a real hardship. And I think just her seeing that happen, I know she'll be extra careful.
Yes.
No, she won't. No, she won't.
No. No. No shot. Mom leaves.
She's 18 years old.
Mom leaves and she's going to go,
she's,
you know,
doing
touch
shots.
Every doorknob she can.
Yeah, she's going to start licking doorknobs and it's going to be a fun time. I really do feel bad for freshmen. If I were a freshman, an incoming freshman, I would just defer a year. I wouldn't go to college this year.
I'd do some online junior college.
Yeah, or just save the money. Save the money.
Get your AA done somewhere else that's, you know, a fraction of the price.
The whole purpose, for the most part, of going to pretty much any school, any university, is the on-campus experience. And if you're not getting that on-campus experience, if you're not getting a taste of what it might feel like to live as an adult without many rules, certainly not rules from someone who lives in the household with you in the form of a mom or a dad, that's what you want. And if you can't get it, why are you spending thousands and thousands of dollars? And that's, of course, dependent on where you even come from. If you're coming from out of state, you're paying even more. It just does not make sense to me. Let's get Kendall on the line so I can... You think I can convince her to just give up, just drop out? I mean, first I'm going to just try to have her drop out because I'm a horrible person. But then just like be like, lady, you're ruining your bank account for nothing.
It's a little too late now. I mean, classes probably start like next week.
No.
Did all this planning, bought all this dorm
stuff.
You
know what? Never mind. I don't care. I don't know.
Yeah, why would you want to help others?
I don't know the family. Maybe they're rich and they don't care. You know what? Maybe Kendall is a shut-in. Maybe she's already a hermit. And so this is actually good. This is one of the few people who are actually going to do well here. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.